You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Greetings. This is Quantum Leap Book Club, and we're discovering new and exciting things about religious and scripture, things that we're sharing now with Elizabeth Ritchie's book. Okay, and the fun that we're having with that, somebody's going to help me here. Ladies, what is the title of this book? Quantum Leap Book Club stuff. Okay, so what is it?
What's the whole kit and caboodle is as sacred as 1, 2, 3.
Very good. Thank you very, very much. Okay, well, appreciate that you're listening in this week, Elizabeth. We thank you for that. Okay, so ladies, let us look at this and see what she's done, because I have Marianne Love with me from Melbourne, Australia. Okay, the down under there. They're in their winter, remember? Okay, and she's a therapist. And she uses and actually brings tremendous new tools and leading edge things into her particular part of the world and with her patients. Okay, and Marianne, I want you to help us understand when it comes to you discovering this, how much have you actually used this material to help deal with your patients? What I have found in 50 years of working with people is religion is the first base of depression. Have you found that? So we'll discuss that a little bit. So I think that with those people, we want to give Elizabeth's book to every one of them, right? And we have Alloway, okay. We have Geraldine Dalby Ball, who is in Sydney, Australia. The Sydney of flags and culture and art, it's so beautiful. Okay, and Geraldine kind of melts my heart because she's out there with the trees and with the nature and the creatures, and she's always taking beautiful, breathtaking shots that she wants to share with us, and she sends to us across the media. And Geraldine actually takes care of our plant people and looks after the particular regulations and codes that needs to be as considerations for the health and well-being of our forest. Okay, and then I have Rosemarie Heyer. And Rosemarie is sitting up in the middle of the night, nonetheless, okay, looking gorgeous, Rosemarie, all right, and actually in Frankfurt, Germany. So we thank you for getting up in the middle of your night and sharing some fun with us, okay? And our usual friend here is Joyce Mullenhauer, who is not with us, and I don't see Trina. Is Trina hiding in the corner someplace?
I'm here.
Okay, there you are. There you are. And we have Trina Cooper, who is from Denver, Colorado. And Trina's an entrepreneur, as well as a spiritual teacher and a strong activist. She definitely quotes what she likes and doesn't like and puts her heart put into whatever energy she needs to in her particular interest levels. So we're going to start with looking at what Elizabeth has given us here. Okay, the one that I'm looking at is on page 17. And she says, I am spirit divine. I am not going to beat around the bush. I love that. I love that. I would have to use that as my motto. I just have to get to the bottom line of things and not waste time, okay? And then she says, I am also the one and only God. I am spirit divine in God. Look at that, okay? So I would like to actually say I use that, although this particular page is very important to me, because sometimes dealing with people and some of the dogma that they do go through with religions, okay? Whilst I've studied the scriptures, there's a lot of love in it, but it's almost like it's human nature for us to look at the good, the bad. You know, we go toward the negative, all right? And we begin to think of ourselves as sinners and evil and whatever else. So we don't see the divine part of us. That, you know, the person that's in there that actually struggles every day to just keep alive and do well, or maybe be kind to somebody. And I think that this kind of reminds us that that's where we're at and what we're doing. So I very much appreciate that part of it. So one of you co-hosts, exactly what page have you found is your favorite? Let's start with Trina.
Well, I like the next one too, because on page 17 where it says, got that? Now close your eyes? Can you see me? And where can I be seen? And it really brought out for me, it says, the fact is only true seekers can find me. And I think about all the religions and all of the all the different teachings that are out there, both indigenous and also more religious or cultural. And everybody looks for the divine. Everybody is trying to find that sense of creator, that sense of God. And they're looking everywhere. And they look in, outside themselves in a lot of places. They look in churches or maybe they look in nature. But the truth is we need to start going inside because like it says on this page, you've been told in the sacred text, the kingdom of God is within you. So step inside you and take a look. And I don't think a lot of people do that. There's a lot who have not been taught to do meditation, to even spend 5 minutes a day reflecting on what they, you know, on what's going on inside of them. Or when they hear that little voice that Elizabeth talked about going, hey, it's me. They don't even question it. You know, they think they're crazy or something. So it's like, listen to the voice and go inside. Look and be a seeker, be a true seeker.
I like that. And I would see that feeling very natural to you, Trina, because you do remind people to do that. You do ask people to look at the best in them. You do. And that's why you're a successful entrepreneur as well, right? Okay, we're going to go to Geraldine. Since I edified you so beautifully about nature and everything, I see your background setting is very Asian, very, very beautiful. Now, what page is your favorite?
It's a favorite because it's also confronting, and it's just to do with nature right now. And it's like there's two sides to everything. And just this week I've been outside and in the fields because we've got more people. We have more housing going in. The housing is of such a type that the trees come down for that. The dams are being dewatered. So we've had a couple of days of needing to be present during those moments and also to be catching the turtles and catching the eels and moving them to the creek. And, you know, there's this moment when we're doing this and I'm actually saying this, eek, you know, horror of horrors to what's happening. But what this eek also is eek, horror of horrors. No, no, 1,000 times no, not a new world. But what I found was so many people are starting to say, it's time to live differently.
Absolutely.
Let's have clusters of houses where we don't have such large spaces, but we still have beautiful spaces, but shared spaces. So while I'm, you know, while I'm watching what is destruction, I have to say, for what it is, you know, and just off to the side of me, I can sort of show, there's just off to the side is a sheet. Behind that sheet is a cage. In that cage is a little ringtail possum that we rescued yesterday. She's been all checked out. She's fine. We'll fatten her up again, and then we'll be putting her back in another place where there's still trees.
Wonderful.
But all of that is part of this new now. And it's how do we get the narrative where we're able to say, yes, right now there's this dream. It's been called the Australian dream. It could be anywhere to have a house, a block of land, and that's my square. You know, but more and more, especially with the younger people. I spoke with a younger person yesterday who was saying to me, the thinking is so old. How do I change it? What university degree do I do? And I'm like, you don't do a university degree to change it. Right now, your precious self, you speaking exactly how you've just spoken to me. And I did voice record her on my phone with permission. The passion and the clarity is exactly this, a new world. But it's like, why do we look like this when something is new? And I feel what's in the book here, I mean, as Elizabeth has said, worse things could certainly happen. I could give you a toothache. This is where we're often at. We're wound up in this particular moment, and that's what I've had to look at. How did the planning and approvals result in what I've been watching the last few days? What do we need to have? And it's not to find bad in that. It's to create a new future view. Because if we say, well, that was wrong and that was wrong, it's more like, what could it look like? We do have people, they do need to live. What could it look like? And what we're getting in the book really is the new world. It has to be here, but it's up to us to vision it. And it is our spiritual side. And people, I heard one of the drivers who who actually his job is to push the trees over. And he said, it hurts me when I do it. He used the word hurt. He's been doing it for 25 years. So there's not, it upsets me, but he said, it hurts me. So whoever people are, they know that there's got to be a new way of doing things. So I chose page 21, horror of horrors, time for a new world.
I think that's so great. And that's so, so real. And what could be more appropriate right now, right? With everything that the world is going through and all the changes and shifting we're doing, that could actually become a daily mantra with that and look at that. Because inevitably, as she says, inevitably we have to look at the fact that we have been praying all our lives for things to be better, haven't we? Mm. And now that yes. The changes are happening, we're making them all bad. And they're not. They had to happen in order for us to go to a different new place with them, right? So it's very, very appropriate that you chose that. That's great. Now, let's go over and see what is keeping Rosemary awake here at 2-3 o'clock in the morning where she's at. So Rosemary, what do you got?
Yeah, I love the word inevitable, because what she's really tackling in this book is the mysterious, awesome idea that God is darkness. Oops, she says, you know, psst, did you hear what I just said? God is darkness, pure divine is darkness. And she takes it on, and it's really up to the most modern science, the idea that God is darkness. Well, what is the darkness about? It's about the vacuum. And modern science has said that in the vacuum, there is nothing, there's no thing, nothing, but it is full of what we would call God. So she's taking that on and saying, it is ineffable for us to understand, but really, I am darkness, God is darkness. And in her humorous way, she shows a picture where she says, psst, I just heard that God is darkness. Oh my God, spirit divine is supposed to be light, because all we are learning, you know, in spirituality is go for the light, be the light, have the light. And now she's saying darkness. So she's really having a way, in a humorous way, to provocate us and start thinking. And just to give a little piece of science about it, I mean, we are talking about dark energy, dark matter since a long time. And some of you might have heard that 90% of it is dark energy or dark matter. Well, what is it? It is a vacuum, which is full of possibilities. Actually, quantum physics says that atoms, I mean, material, is not really a thing. It's more a possibility, a tendency. Well, who decides? Who decides what happens? We decide. We are part of God. We are part of the divine. And we decide what happens with that darkness. That is a potential, actually. God is a potential, and we are a potential. And so she puts it out right there that you don't like to pair up God and darkness, right? You like to have to see the light. But the clarity is that it is a vacuum and an endless possibility in what she calls darkness. So I love that part that she's taking on in a humorous way, you know.
I like it too. I think the whole book adds humor to questions that have been painful or very deep and unanswered. You know, most people get very confused about scripture, and you have to really be an avid reader and a researcher to get to the deeper truths that then make sense of the scriptures. It's not making, mm-hmm. you know, what's happening here. She's not making the scriptures wrong. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She's actually showing you, go the next step, hear it from a different angle. It's like the elephant and Elizabeth's dancing all around it. One point she's talking about the trunk. Then she goes back and talks about the tail, you know? So she's having this rounded look at something that has become a dogma. And what more powerful than what you've just shared, Rosemary? Whilst there's nothing in the nothingness or the blackness, there's everything, isn't there? Yes. So while we see the nothing, we know that the all is. So it's really, it makes you go deeper, put your brain in a whole different place, okay? We want to make sure that we see that. And there you sit, Marianne Love, there in Melbourne. And I'm sure you're probably cold by this time, right? You guys have winter down there yet?
Yeah, it's getting chilly out, but warm inside with our heaters on, so we're good.
Okay, so what do you find in some of these pages?
Well, similar to Rosemary, page 24, just kept taking on the point of the darkness, I really think it's fascinating how much influence the Christian tradition has really dominated the thinking of people. And Dusty speaks about how we've linked darkness to the devil, calling it the prince of darkness, right? But I really like how she says, well, who's the king? Me, of course, spirit divine, like I said, I'm the king and the queen of darkness. And I think this is a really big deal for people to get their head around. Like, how can, in all our Christian influence, which has linked darkness to evil, bad, and guilt and shame, consider then in our divinity and in the love of God, we're also is the darkness. And I know definitely in the work that I do with clients that a lot of this influence is there, even when they would not call themselves Christian or religious. It's still in the thinking, the guilt and the shame and the beliefs I'm bad or I'm separate from, I'm less than, I could never be divine. Like, even to say I'm divine seems way outside the realm of many people. Like, you're saying somehow you're better than everybody else. No, we're all equally of the same essence of divinity, but this is just a huge mind leap for many, and a lot of the work is undoing the programs around divinity, around sexuality, around shame and guilt, and I think it's been pointed to very clearly here, how deep down we're all divine in all of it.
I hear you. And you know what's so familiar, Marianne, is that when we're saying blackness is evil, okay, and you look at all of our clergy, what do they wear? You know what I'm saying? So there's so many times, and young people today, very much young people are asking the questions that we were taught to shut up. You don't ask that. You be quiet. Children have to, you know, be seen, not heard, right? Young people aren't listening to that. They're asking. And actually they ask, so if blackness is so evil, why is the priest wearing black? And it's like, good question. Have you ever asked one? You know, go out and ask them, why are you wearing black if it's the devil's colors? You know what I'm saying? And so we have young people that's going to push us forward to seeing things better and more godly in perception of happiness and joy and what we look to God for, love, right? And so the way I see how Elizabeth's done that, she, like, I've actually given this book that she had many years ago, she gave me when she first wrote them, a box of them, and I put it amongst the young children. And when they were all reading it, especially because she makes references on her pages to different parts in the Bible scripture, she'll say, go look at Luke or whatever, whatever, okay. And the young people would actually go from her book to and found a Bible and went there and read more. And so when they came back from my next session, they actually had Bibles, something they had no interest in until they picked up her book, okay? So it's like for people to think, well, this is kind of taking you away from the truth of religion. No, it took the young people into it. And they could actually take different references that she made and begin to find scripture in it. I didn't realize this because so many years ago I did theology, but now they have Bibles that you can just look up a word. You know, you go in with a word, like if you want to research the scriptures for happiness, and then it has all the pages that you can find happiness on. Well, the young people taught me that. They brought their Bibles in, and they would use certain of these words, especially the word darkness, okay? And then they would go to the Bible and look that up and hear all the passages about, right? And so this is those that have actually been in all of the damnation of Christianity, all of the sin, and we're all sinners and we're all damned and we're all this and that. We need to brighten up. You know, in this period of our world, we need to brighten up. We need to come alive, and we need to realize that what Jesus taught was love. What God emanates is hope for all of us, not damnation. I mean, in the most dire moments of our life, who do we reach out to? We start asking God to help us, right? And if we think this is a punishing, dark, you know, that we're already damned, how far out are you going to reach for any help from that? You know what I mean? So I love how it actually brings out the playfulness of this. It really, really does bring some good, exciting things here. Now, I see that we have Elizabeth with us. Elizabeth, you want to take a couple of minutes here and share some maybe insights on why you actually wrote the book?
Well, I went on an intensive with you and made a life plan. And that was to write three books. And I've often thought, I was a journalist for a while. And so I felt myself to be a writer. And
at the same time, at this time, I was a mother. And I was reading children's books to my two children all the time, picture books. And when I first decided on the first book I was going to write, when I went on that intensive, I thought, oh, I'm going to write a children's book, because I was so in touch with all the children and the books that they were so simple, and they only had a few words and then good, great, great pictures that illustrated the meaning of the words. But then when on my way home, I was sitting in the car on the way home, and I shut my eyes and started thinking, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to, and like this, you know, and I saw that behind my eyes, it was all dark. And I heard, and I saw this little phrase, over here. The still small voice. Listen to this still small voice. And I saw kind of a bubble of black, and I saw the words. So it's the first, one of the first things in the book is what I saw.
Yeah.
Except it was all black, probably with white writing, actually. And I realized that the book was going to be not for children. Well, yes, for children, but it was going to be for all the children of God.
Yes.
And that was everybody. And it took off from there. And I really learned a lot myself writing the book, you know, and it actually took me, believe it or not, 12 years.
Wow.
But I wrote the first 100 pages, or it was like the whole book, and it was 100 pages in about 3 weeks' time. On an Easter vacation, when I had some time, and my husband was home and took care of the children, and I worked for 3 weeks, and I wrote 100 pages. It was the full book. And for the next 12 years, I added 200 more pages. And, you know, it was in the beginning of computer times, when people were using just learning about computers, and I was just learning. And so it was slow that way. But I really wanted to write a simple book that explained. I had a degree in the study of religion and had learned quite a bit. And then I had started studying with you, Grandmother. And I mean, a lot of what you had taught me, you know, up until that point when I started writing that book, I really owe to you is for the wisdom that I gleaned. Yeah. A lot of things, you know.
All I did was stimulate the genius of the story. And I don't take credit for any more of that, believe me. Inside you have still so many stories to write. I could only hope that you take the time to do that. I really mean that. You have more to say. And I am so happy. Like I said, my whole desire to stimulate interest in your book and everything is right now. Right now, the state that we're in, and people are finding that their prayer, they feel their prayers are not being answered. They need now to see this whole other aspect of it, you know, that you can't just mumble these recitals and then sit there and think that everything's going to happen. It's like some of the things that my co-hosts have shared. There's more involvement when you start listening, like when you said you closed your eyes. And for that time, maybe for the first time you've ever closed your eyes to pray, you attached and immediately saw, all you saw was darkness, right? And so, of course, you're going to explore that. You're looking for God, and you closed your eyes and you saw darkness, okay? Some mishap, some mystery, you know, what's that all about, right? And you went for the answers. And that little still voice is you, that actually the God within us says, here I am, you know, let's do this. Every step of my life, I can attest to the fact that that little voice has said to me, you can do this. When I'm going, no, 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 I can't. You could do this. Okay. And so I appreciate that you move forward with it. So right now, what are you doing? I mean, this is obviously something that we're all excited about. And I don't know how much print you got, but I've had everybody I know trying to get it on Amazon now. I still don't have my copy, so I'm actually sharing copies that Joyce has made from her book, but I have the order in. I want to get more. There's a lot of young people, and also I don't want to just categorize young people. I'm talking to a lot of seniors, because they are under the impression that this virus is their last step. This virus is here to take them out. Mm. And that is so not true. Okay, so I'm not going to get into the politics of the virus, but it's to actually get them away from that, to start looking at this. And at first they were all shocked because they all admitted that when I said we're going to actually have a book and we're going to discuss God. And when they started looking at your cartoons and everything, everybody was frowning and looking at each other and wondering if they had the right book. And I said, okay, so what do you have? And some lady looked at it. She goes, I don't know what I have. I think I have somebody's notes, you know? And so that I began to laugh and said, that's the book. Okay. And that the artist wanted you to see it as doodles and little doodle things and actually notes that come out of her. And so they begin to share some of the startling things. Startling is their word, not mine, that actually made them question, okay, what did she mean by that? You know, and then there would be 45 minute discussions on just one of your statements. You know what I'm saying? So they begin to really talk about something in a different way, not worrying about dying or if they're going to go to hell or whatever. They actually start looking at it. And each one, when I went back through, gave me letters actually saying what they did when they went home with it. And a lot of them were funny because the husbands didn't come. Okay, because it was a senior citizen center, right? There were probably only 8 men out of 50 people, right? And so the women shared, they took it home to their husbands and shoved it in his face and said, there, you're not going to hell. You got to get better. I love it. You're talking about 60 to 80 year old people, right? You're going to get better, you know? So that is the spirit that's coming from it. But where do you want it to go now? You know, like the last time we had you on, you said you were thinking about adding or you have added stuff to it. Okay, where do you want to take this? And what I'm looking for is not you. I'm glad you're adding to the book, Elizabeth, but where do you want to go now with it? Where, you know, you know so much more, right? What's the next book? What can we look forward to?
Well, actually, I'm coming out with a new edition right now.
Okay.
An e-book and a new edition with a wonderful new cover.
Okay.
It's amazing. I'm just so happy with the new cover. It's exciting because it's symbolic. I mean, it takes one of the cartoons out of from the book, the one that I use to represent the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah.
The circular one with it's got a little pictures inside the circle, which represents the all, and it has little pictures. It has an elephant and a Starship Enterprise and a cowboy boot and a itty bitty teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini.
Oh wow!
And yeah, there it is. She's got it. Eloy has it. It's got a mother corn mother holding a stalk of corn up in the bottom. And it's got a kitchen sink, so it's got everything, including the kitchen sink. And that symbolizes the entire whole universe, all of God, everything.
Yeah.
And that's going to be on the front of the book. And I'm very, very pleased. Oh, I'm so excited.
So
it truly expresses what I...
Okay. Well, that expresses what, though? Tell us, what could we expect?
Symbolically, it expresses more than the simple cover that I have on it now. So that it'll be eye-catching, and I think, you know, I'd love to get into conversations with people much more than I am now. And I'm seeking ways to do that. And this will stimulate me to get on the move. Then I have the second book.
How, if any, does that differ from some of the stuff? Are you kind of framing it in the same way you've wrote what you have here?
It's the same book inside, essentially. There's a few changes, but it's the same book inside. And for me to be reading it anew and hearing everything you have to say about it, I never really did market it in a particularly active way. I did briefly, but things came up in my life that...
Yeah.
That I was really not able to get out there and do it. And I think I'm praying and that I can get out there and do it.
Yeah.
Much more than I am.
It's time you get out. You're a great presenter. You have fun and you're alive. You can do very well. And you have a beautiful voice. I hope you involve your singing and when you're doing your presentations. And but here, like I said, in what you've done, I would hope, and I'm kind of motivating you, Elizabeth. So listen up, right?
Okay.
There's so much like the tetrahedron. And when you go in this book, what I would hope that you take time to throw a few pages in there to where you actually take sacred symbols and sacred geometry, not just the cartoons, but to kind of whet people's thoughts to be looking at the symbols and some of that, because you can actually quote some scriptures to a lot of the sacred symbols and the sacredness of the ancient civilizations. And while you've got lots of statements there, it's like, I like it. I think this is on page 20, where you say, "Forgive me, but it's true. I am the darkness. I am the inky blackness of the place behind your eyes." You know, and to show a black hole there or something, you know, it's like, the reason I'm saying that, let me give justice to why I'm saying that, okay, is that when I handed this off to the young people, and I said to them, what comes out of you when you look at this? What wants to express itself like it has for Elizabeth, that you don't, you know, you can use all kinds of different letters. You know, we're not trying to do some formal textbook. What would come out of you? And what a lot of them got, and they could, when I asked them to explain it, they couldn't find the words to say why it is that this particular symbol or this particular, you know, what geometry came out or whatever, they said it, I knew it was in me. And cause I had instructed them, go inside, close off your eyes, go into the blackness. What do you find there? Okay. And some of them come back and said, for a while there was nothing but the blackness, but then I realized that you weren't going to be happy if I don't come back and say something. So they started to make it up. Right. And it's like, so I told them, and where did you go to make it up? You know, and they said, well, I just started thinking about things. And then pretty soon something showed up. And I said, so what's here came out of you. Is that correct? You know, and then they started going, oh, yeah, it did come out of me. Yeah, you're right. And I said, it's okay if you think you pretended it. It's okay if you think you imagined it. Or it's okay even that you wanted to make sure I was happy that you did something. I don't care. But the point I want to make is you come with that. Nobody else in this room has that but you. So something is talking. Could it be who's talking to Elizabeth? And so they went really deep with that. But every one of them, and that's why I'm saying, you know, maybe if you throw some in there and stimulate them more, but they all come out with a geometry. Some come out with some numerology, but most of it was just geometry and abstract lines and stuff. And then some of them come out with symbols, like definitely parts of the tetrahedron. And it's so, I mean, in my mind, I'm sure you're the same. I realized that was the God starting to raise and emanate from them, because you can't go into any of the sacred symbols or any of the sacred, like the tetrahedron. You can't go into that. And especially these kids had never seen it. You know, they I think I've seen something like that once in my life, but no, I really didn't know what that was. No, it wasn't in geometry. You know, it wasn't just, so they didn't know where it was coming from. And every one of them had experience with it. So you've given a great gift, not only to us who are trying to find answers in actually settling with our lives. You are finding answers, helping the young find answers to take them into deeper part of their life. So it's a wonderful and great experience. So co-host, you want to share some other parts of this with us and actually see some more exciting? I love one too that she has over on page 42. I am so clever. I use my own body to create the universe. I mean, you know you're going to get questions with that, Elizabeth. You know you're going to get some outrageous questions with that. So very good. So co-host, who's got something? Got something you want to ask?
I do. I'm Trina Des. On page 30, which is, I don't have the book, but I have the page here. And it says, now, with yet another sweeping and astounding proclamation, let us boldly go where spiritual wimps have dared not go before. But be forewarned, this won't be the last strange and dubious notion I will set before you. Urging you now, don't say no, just say oh. A and ponder it in your heart like Mother Mary did when she was asked or that and told that she would be the mother of God. And when I read that, it just jumped in my heart because I heard myself saying to people, stay in the question. Stay curious, be in the question. And the one thing I really noticed with this is when you say, don't say no. And what I felt was no, all of a sudden the walls go up. Everything goes up. You're not ready to hear anything else. You're not ready to think anything else. It's just like, no. But when you go, oh, all of a sudden it's like, what if this? What if that's going on? What if this is going on? What if I actually tried that? Where would that take me? And so for me, like, I love this quote. It just, and I find myself saying, oh, I just want to tell people that. Don't say no. Just go, oh.
I've used that on my wall. I agree with you, Trina. Go ahead.
It's just a fun and different way to let people like break down those barriers and not put the blocks up, but say, where is that world of possibility that's out there? And what things have I not tried? And is this impossible? Could this be a miracle? Can I be open to it happening in my life? Mm-hmm. There's so many possibilities when you go, oh, and you ask and you stay in that question and you stay, keep yourself open and allowing. And yeah, it's amazing what comes in.
It sure is. It sure is.
I love this one. I may print it and put it on my wall.
Well, I just took her little say, don't say no, say oh. I'm doing that to myself because sometimes I see I'm starting to try to make a narrow choice, you know, and it's like, I don't have to. I just say oh, and I'm willing to see it from whatever point it has to come. So it is, in its storyline, it's very, very powerful. I agree with you. Okay, any of the other co-hosts, anybody got something you want to share?
Yeah, I'd like to share about the idea that everything exists in God. So we are actually in God. And on page 37, she says, it's so wonderful. She says, I am everything. I'm the only thing that does exist. And then she says, I am you and everything else are simply fingers, arms, legs of me, of the spirit divine. So wake up and die right. I love that. Once you know that, you can die right. You can actually really move on and you know it. And what came to me is that the idea of that God is everything and we are in God. I mean, it is like the vacuum. It's like an ocean and we are the fish. I mean, we can't be outside of God. And some of us are fish and we don't know that we are in an ocean, but that's okay. We're learning. So we're like learning with this book. what religion actually does, it says God is an entity separate from me. It's up there somewhere and I need to pray to it. And it always has wondered me when I went in church that people bow their head when they pray because they don't believe that they are God. They believe they are sinners or something like that. And she's saying, no, you are inside of God and God is inside of you. You are in everything and God is in everything. And actually, the modern physicists who are actually exploring consciousness and physics, like Dr. Fred Allen Wolf, for example, he actually says something like, there's really nothing out there independent or separate from you. It's all depending on what's going inside of you. So we need to come up with the idea, really, and live that we are inside of God and there's nothing out there. There's nothing outside of God because God is everywhere. Like the fish couldn't say there's something outside the ocean. No, everything is in the ocean. We are all living in the ocean. And we are all actually not only living in the ocean and are surrounded by God, it actually flows through us constantly. And there are physics, modern scientists who say that we are in a constant feedback loop with God, what we call God. We are constantly communicating back and forth. And we are, as she said so nicely, we are the arms and hearts and hands and feet and nose and boogies of the body of God. So I really love that part. That's on page 37.
All right. That's very good. What I'm so tickled about is like the group of us that are talking and sharing here. What we have actually pursued in our life is to read more, to learn more, to understand more. And there was such a period of time to where there were titles like subject categories that made it either right or wrong to pursue the kind of studies that we've pursued, right? And so what I have found, and this actually was something said at a presentation that a very, very powerful physicist that I know, very renowned in all fields of the science, actually said, and I don't even know if it's his word or me influencing his word, but he actually said, today's science is yesterday's esoteric studies. Isn't that powerful? I mean, that was so cool. It's like, that's exactly what it is, you know? And it's like what Elizabeth has awakened that, because she's taking scripture and Bible and actually making you look further to coming into the sciences that we all live. I mean, we live this science, okay? We live in that. And I don't know how you are, but I don't know how life could be if I didn't embrace all of this and that I didn't live every breath and every moment as this adventure. You know, it's like people ask me about writing books. A day in my life is a book. How many books would I be writing? You know what I'm saying? And so you just, once you put yourself into accepting this, living this and playfully playing with it, as Elizabeth has showed us here, then you go forward and the child within has not passed or gone. The playfulness, the spirit of it, the innocence of it stays with us. Okay, does anyone else have something you want to share? And we've got a few minutes left here.
Yeah, and from Sydney, Australia, I do, definitely, because this section, humanity is ready to understand the inevitable. And just on the page before, which is really great, we got a definition of inevitable, and that's ineffable, not inevitable. Ineffable is when something is too overwhelming to be expressed. It's, you know, too big not only to be expressed in words or described, but it's also too sacred to be spoken, or the unspeakable. And the exciting thing is today we're starting to be able to talk about things that are, for example, on any subject, but particularly what I love, and building on from what Rosemary was saying as well, and what this book definitely gives us, while the quotes are mostly from the Bible, I give great thanksgiving that I've had the opportunity to travel and travel without a particular purpose when I was young. And it took me from a Catholic upbringing, Catholic primary school, Catholic high school, asking lots of questions, feeling things didn't quite fit, to going, oh, wow, I'm now in a, you know, watching Buddhist people do things. I'm watching the Jains in India. I'm watching the Hindus. I'm with the Muslim people in Palestine. I'm, you know, and it's just like, oh, there's commonalities of who we are as human. That word human nature, and I love that it's human nature because it brings the what we might call human into nature, and our natural beingness is one with the planet. And I saw that across the whole globe, and every aspect of what I've seen in here is completely applicable from what I've experienced to any age, race, religion, belief system, because it's really touching upon principles, and principles go beyond a particular religion. Yeah. So that's a reason I love the book. And that particular sentence, humanity is ready. And technology is also really helping us, because we've got all people, but particularly young people, communicating with each other in different countries, just like a web chat, like you go on Zoom to someone down the road, you're on Zoom with someone in China having a conversation, practicing English. It's beautiful.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Thank you for sharing. So, Marianne, do you have something you would like to say and add with us?
Absolutely. I really loved on page 28 in the book where she says, in any case, by the time I'm finished here, I want that spongy cauliflower substance behind your eye sockets to catch a glimpse of blissful light of true knowledge. Ideally, I want you to be orgasmically aroused, downright titillated with the passion, with an awesome passion of understanding. And by the time I'm finished here, you can say with your eyes closed that the darkness comprehends the light.
Oh, isn't it powerful?
That's profound. I want to put on my fridge. Like, that's profound. The darkness comprehends the light.
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? Elizabeth, we're going to bring you back on, and please let our listeners know where to contact you and any information, and actually give us a little promotion on your book, you know, where do we go get it, and so forth and on. So come on out and show us what you got.
All right. Glad to do it. It's available on Amazon, and you need the whole title. The whole kit and caboodle is As Sacred as 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
I will repeat. The whole kit and caboodle is As Sacred as 1, 2, 3. And that's at Amazon, and down the side, that's my medicine name that I received after I had done a vision quest. And that's why the little frogs are there, because the name means spring frog.
Okay. There will be people that are not going to see you. They're going to hear you as well. Okay. So say your medicine name and we could see the book cover.
Okay. So it's the medicine name is Tuantua. It looks like Dutsu. Some, it can be pronounced a number of ways. So I'm told.
Many dialects around that. Yes.
Right.
Hey,
that's the author. I'm the author. So that's what you will see when you go to Amazon. You have to look up the whole kit and caboodle. And as I said, any time now it's going to be posted. My ebook is going to be posted with the new cover. So you could try it, whatever you prefer, because essentially they're both the same except for the cover and a few other things. The second preface.
Yeah.
Which I had fun writing. Yeah. And I'm available at dustydancer@frontier.com. Dusty Dancer.
Is that lowercase, Dusty Dancer?
It could be either way. Okay. It can be either way. dustydancer@frontier.com.
And the dancer is letting us know you're a sun dancer, right?
Yes, I think you could assume that.
You're a ceremonial dancer. Absolutely, you are.
Right.
Singer, chanter. So that's good. So definitely we want people to see and get the book. And it's just something that, like I said, I'm so happy to see that it's not actually labeled that it's just an adult book or it's a children's book or whatever. You know what I mean? And I can tell you, I've shared it with all ages. And it brings out the wisdom and the beauty in everybody that I've given it to. And it's just really an enlightening way for people to begin to explore some of their own questions and everything in the particular religious scriptures here. And I think you bring it, whilst we have such processes that we keep trying to teach people how to go into the nothingness or the blackness behind our eyes when we close it. The way you've done that and how you've brought that out, it's just so willing for people. And here's what I want to share is that with the young people, when they started doing that and they actually never, okay, we're talking, when I say young people from anywhere from 8 years old to 22, okay, these are the range of ages. And everybody in the first group, which was probably about 42 people, 42 young people, they had never been aware, Elizabeth, that when they closed their eyes, there was blackness. They were like an 8 to 10 year old group, and it's like they closed their eyes, and it was only in saying the point is close your eyes and see the blackness. They all did, and it's like they afterwards. I said, so how many of you have ever experienced actually closing your eyes and knowing that there's the blackness? They all raised their hands. Never had they closed their eyes and experienced the blackness. And that, to me, the book is showing the need for us to continue to talk and share and get out here. Be the messenger. You know, don't look for popularity or everybody to agree with you. If it has to be controversial for them, let it be. But you plant that seed, and something as easy as what you've taught us, close your eyes and see the blackness. It just opens everything, doesn't it? So it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us this week. And remember, people, to get out and get the book and come with us for the next week. Again, Elizabeth, we asked you and invite you to join us again next week, if you would. And we'll finish off the book at that, okay? And for my co-hosts, thank all of you for being as alive and as dedicated as you are as messengers. Keep doing what you're doing because you're making a difference. Know that I love you, and all over the world, let's just make a big hug, okay? And we hug each other and we make it work. So OCO, and we'll see you next week.
OCO.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.